You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.FM. It's the 25th of March, 2021. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Mike Rhodes, author and founder of one of Australia's largest digital marketing firms, WebSavvy. First, before we get there, we got a couple things to go through. Hey, Dave, how are you doing today, man?
I'm not doing too bad. How about you, Jim?
I'm good. Long week. I don't know what it is, but March came in like a lion and has just been roaring the whole way through. Pounding long hours. That's how I've been.
I guess. You know what? If you have to go one side of the too busy or not busy enough.
Indeed, eh? Could be worse. You guys, you and Mary, you're up in Whistler now?
Yeah, we are. And, you know, as you know, we end up sort of having to work full time with just equipment that's a little bit slower. But man, when you get to go out and play, doing it on a couple skis, flying down a mountain is a pretty good way to go. Credit to Vail. You know what? I rag on them all the time, but they've done a really, really good job of keeping this place good, like in good distanced shape, one person on a gondola at a time, that sort of thing.
Oh, excellent. Right on. Okay, it's been a busy week. We want to get through the news section as fast as we can. A couple of big announcements. This is it for... actually, it's not even a big deal. Hey, did you see the piece that Rand Fishkin, that SparkToro, put out last week on zero-click searches at Google and just, you know, the preponderance of them, how many there are and how Google's, like, you know, taking your traffic? Well, Google had something to say about that. Danny Sullivan responded, outlining, outlining how Google actually works. But then we're talking about Rand Fishkin, who kind of already understands how Google actually works. Danny and Rand have gone at each other a couple of times in the course of their friendship. While working together, Danny often taking the side of Google. Now, working for Google directly. So as Danny says, a lot of people use Google in ways that don't need to generate a click. I mean, they're looking up sports scores. They're using Google as a dictionary. They're using Google to figure out measurements or conversions or something. And that's not going to generate a click. Danny kind of questioned, how to say it politely, where Rand was coming from on this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny because it took me back a little bit. I mean, only like was a year, 2 years ago when Gary
last time they did it
was going off on Rand for daring to say that click through rate might be an impact, right? Which is always fun. Every time Rand says something that is against something Google wants them to say, you know, Google does respond. So I guess kudos to Rand. You're somebody that really obviously gets under their skin enough to like actually get their attention, or you're significant enough in the industry that they feel the need to respond. In Google's defore, because I'm quite comfortable using it as an assistant, right, as opposed to find and seek a specific piece of information. So some element of that will be that. Now, as we'll talk to Mike about, or maybe, you know, gather with him, isn't it interesting that this doesn't happen with paid search queries? Of course it doesn't, because they want the click, right? Like, so that's what it's going to sort of boil down to there.
Well, an interesting thing I'm finding, and then, you know, I'm far be it from me to introduce my highly unscientific evidence to our highly unscientific data to this conversation, but if in my SEO business, if the click rate to my clients' websites was declining, I've been doing this for like 25 years now, and if I was in the habit of creating an ecosystem where they were losing clicks, I'd get fired. Like, I'd be so fired so fast, so gone, and I wouldn't be doing this anymore. In my experience, click rates have been increasing over time, every month, over and over and over again. Google may be used differently by, you know, users as we go along, but I honestly don't see the utility stealing from most websites. In fact, most websites don't even get on Google, it appears.
No, I think you're right there. I mean, in a lot of ways, right? I mean, I'm thinking of things like publishers, or, you know, content producers that are producing just answers, right? Like, mm-hmm. where they're producing, you know, how many of X is Y, right? You know, those sorts of things where they just come up in a featured snippet and off you go, and you never actually proceed further than that. Where somebody like you, Jim, is probably not really my house. Right, so that's where it sort of starts to segment out a little bit, but I think at the end there are really legitimate points on both sides. Like, there are legitimate arguments on both sides. But at the end of the day, if I look at my site and I go, you know, I have some links out from resource pages on our site to hosting companies that I like, to you know, tools that I use that we've reviewed, those sorts of things. And if I had one of those tool manufacturers, for example, call up and go, we noticed that you edited your page, so you answered a bunch of like the questions that people were asking in their comments, and we don't like that because they had to click through us before. These were my users, just like they're Google's users. They're not the tool's users in the case of our site, and they're not even my users in the case of traffic I'm hoping to get from Google. They're Google's users. They're doing what they want with them. And that's really their, you know, I'm all for like sort of some semblance of controls, but in this one, I'm like, that's their user. They're doing the right thing for their user. They need to keep people coming back so that you, Mike, me, I keep mentioning Mike because, you know, I'm seeing him on the screen and going, I'm looking forward to talking to him. You know, we don't have jobs if Google doesn't do a great job and satisfy their users. So if this is what's satisfying them to keep them come back and keep them doling out some cash so Mike can make money and keep them wanting to find some organic traffic so you and I can make some cash, you know, that's what Google's got to do. And it's their properties that they're doing this on. And, you know, that's sort of what it all circles back to. I can go, I don't like it. Doesn't matter. Like, I wish I could wave a magic wand to be number one for every query for every client that I have. That's not happening, right? I'd like to think it would, and I'm working to it, but it's never going to happen with all of them. You know, and so be it. I don't get to control Google. But if you ever do figure out the algorithm, you want to pass it over, that's fine.
We should talk about Baidu later. I did figure out something really neat about them, but that's a different topic altogether. Pages out of a 2 million sample that Ahrefs used, 94% of them didn't get a single visit from Google in the study period. About 66% didn't even have a single backlink. So imagine how much of the web is out there that you know, maybe discovered by Google, maybe in Google's index, maybe he's way deep down in the dark index somewhere that is never gonna, like, you know, see the light of day. But, you know, so much that just doesn't get any traffic at all. That's mind blowing.
That is really, really big. And it's funny because we've talked in the past about them having different levels of disk. And I'm like, yeah, these are like 5,400 RPM, you know, disks stashed in their basement that are hosting some of these pages, I'm sure. And I'm you know, exaggerating a bit, but and then there'll be people like 5,400. I don't even know what that is. Did that exist? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, none of this is particularly surprising to me. I mean, you think of all the pages, really? Like you and I think of, like, and here's a blog post I made. We don't think of Arrow, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6 of all of these blog posts, right? Like, of every blog on the planet has like so many tag pages, category pages, various pages, right? Like, all of these pages are counted, right, in these totals. And are they getting traffic? No. Should they get traffic? No. Right? Like, so we have to count those in and go, okay, probably about half of the pages on the web are just rubbish anyway. Well, right? Yeah, or they're parameter-based queries where it has a different parameter, but it's just a different sort order. Right?
Let me rephrase the results of that study for a second. 6.7% of the 2 million pages in their sample group actually got traffic. 6.7.
They don't even deserve traffic. How the heck did they get a backlink? Now, we know that these are like scrapers and just those, like, a lot of these are like just those crap links that just appear out of nowhere. And we all go, I don't even know. Should I block this? Or at least we used to all question whether we should be blocking a lot of these links.
Oh, and the truth is, we don't know anything about the quality of pages that Ahrefs studied in their study.
Indeed. And they have a very robust backlink database. And I've read the sort of different descriptions of different, you know, databases. I do like using Ahrefs. I use it all the time. But I do find they go often for volume, right? Of late, like, which is makes them absolutely great for these studies. It's volume. They have volumes and volumes of data. Not as much on the analysis side. Personally, I prefer my data in that format. Just give it to me. Let me analyze it. But at the same time, we could look at different databases and go, yeah, it might be a little smaller, but how many pages, what are the backlink profiles of pages when we just look at the backlinks from the best places on the web? Like, the ones that really matter, how now does that start to play out if we're sort of filtering out all the, like, sort of low-hanging fruit? But I found it a fascinating study regardless. But none of it really surprised me other than more pages have backlinks than I would have thought. I thought out of all the pages on the web, probably only about 6.7 deserve to have some good solid backlinks to them. But that's where my point comes in. We're not talking about good solid backlinks. We're just talking about anything.
We got to jump to commercial any second now. The one story that we didn't touch that I'd like to mention, but we're not going to get a chance to cover, is the story that Roger Monty wrote about the evolution of Wix and the deal that Wix made with Google to give, what do you call them, Wix Masters? To give Wix Masters more access to some of the features in Google My Business. It's worth reading over at...
For maximum customer engagement and retention, choose CleverTap. CleverTap is a leading customer engagement and retention platform that helps digital brands maximize lifetime value. Over 8,000 apps around the world, including Vodafone, Star, and Sony, trust CleverTap to improve user engagement, boost retention, and fuel long-term revenue growth. Learn more at clevertap.com. That's clevertap.com.
Jamming and spamming, cashing in the clicks. SEO is always in session.
Only on WMR.fm.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Content for your ears and everything in between.
Only on WMR.fm.
takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's Jim Hedger from Digital Ways Media and Dave Davies from Beamsock Internet Marketing. And we got a treat this week. We are joined by Mike Rhodes, the author of The Ultimate Guide to Google Ads. Yeah. How many updates do you need for a book like that?
So that's the sixth edition that just came out, but I was very lucky. Perry and Brian, my co-authors, they started that way back 2006, 2007. I only got involved in the fourth edition about 8 years ago or so. So they asked me to write all the technical parts back then. And we keep on rolling. Google, as you know, gives us plenty to write about.
Oh, undoubtedly. But before we get to the writing about Google, you I love the part in your bio where it says you founded and exited three businesses before starting a highly successful digital marketing firm. I'm curious, did the experience running different sorts of businesses, and I don't even know what kind of businesses they are, but the experience running different sort of businesses, does that help you understand how Google Ads and digital marketing works?
I don't know if it helps so much on the Google Ads side, but it definitely gives me a lot of empathy for the business owner that we deal with day in, day out. The first time I used Google Ads was a friend actually offered to give me half of his business. I didn't know what I was getting into, so I said yes. This is back in 2004. I had seen, actually, it was Perry Marshall, was the person that introduced me to Google Ads. His first trip to Australia in 2004, he was talking about it. I went back to my mastermind, hair on fire, like trying to tell everybody about this new thing. It's crazy, like you only show ads to people that are searching for exactly what you have, and you only pay if they click. It's amazing. And this guy said, well, yeah, I don't want you to consult. I don't want you to, like, you know, I don't want to pay you hourly. I'll give you half of my business. And we sold $100,000 worth of stuff in 3.5 weeks. And I went, oh, okay, this works. Of something like Google Ads, mate, just do it for me. Just get me more leads, more customers, more profit. That's what they care about.
You know, it's fun talking to people who got into the industry in the early days, because it's often our origin stories are those stories that you can't believe this actually happened. But yeah. A bit of luck, a little bit of insight, and just a little bit of serendipity, and boom, you find yourself suddenly operating a growing business. When did you know you you had a penchant for reaching people through Google Ads?
Yeah, lots of serendipity, a lot of luck. That first experience of, oh my God, this works, and then helping other businesses, it was the longest time. I actually spoke at a conference. It was a radio, funnily enough, conference. And I was kind of the digital friendly guy that came along and spoke to all of these radio advertisers. And I remember very clearly, I'd been doing that for 2-3 years. We did about half a dozen a year. And it was an interesting model, but we don't need to go into the details, but there was lots of consulting involved. So you do a day of dog and pony show from stage and then back-to-back consulting for 3 days with all these different businesses. And I was very aware that I was there as a guest of the radio in these consulting sessions. We'd be talking about it, and I would hear myself saying over and over again, look, I'm not here to pitch my services. I'm here as a guest of the radio station, but I think you should do blah, blah, blah. And one day this guy said, well, I wish you bloody would, because we need you, mate. That was the light bulb moment of, I really need to do this properly. These businesses need it. I have always loved the business of business. I've always loved helping businesses grow. And they were struggling. They were doing letterbox drops and Yellow Pages ads and customers and profit. And I felt like I had that, and let's put the two together.
It's funny, you bring up an interesting sort of angle, and I think everybody has been there at some point who sort of grew in our sort of era people, right? Where you sort of got in and I faced the same thing, and it's like you're sort of in early and you're at other people's disposal and you're like trying to stall, like, I'm not really trying to pitch you here, I'm just trying to do this. But then I think of like all the like many hats, exactly you were talking about, I'm a business owner, I'm wearing 100 hats. That same business owner is like, yeah, that's great, you've tried to show me how to do this myself because you're trying to be a nice guy. I don't have that hat. I don't have room on my head
yeah.
for that hat to wear. So just do it. Let me pay you to do it. Do a good job and make me $3 for every one you cost and I'm good to go. Like,
yeah. And I totally didn't value that at the beginning. My first few clients, I was charging $397 a month. Woo, set the world on fire. Right. But I still have my second client from back in 2007. She's still with me today, which I love the fact that we have been able to help that business grow so much over the years when e-com was nothing for them back in 2006.
Right.
There's actually a lovely story there, but I won't go into it. But just, yeah, helping businesses like that grow. And like you say, just bumping into it by accident. And I'm not pitching you a very consultative sell. I really don't want to take any of your money, please. But please, will you? Because we need what you've got.
Right.
Maybe I'm a bit slow.
No, I mean, you got your start. We're talking 2006 here. Okay, I can remember the landscape-ish in 2006. I was more on the organic side than paid. But I remember, I'm sure you were right here, but I'm not going to really say that to you. If you were giving that today, but even just as you circa then, like you're still sort of shy, feeling like you're at the disposal and favor of those that have invited you to speak there, could you even with a straight face say to a business owner, oh, for sure, here's just a few quick tips and you've got this, you could do that yourself?
I liken it to flying a plane. So back in the day, it was like flying a light plane, a little Cessna, which if you can drive a car, you can fly a Cessna. It's a car that also goes up and down. It really is not any more complicated than that. These days, you're climbing into a 747 cockpit. There are bells and knobs and whistles everywhere. And if you get it wrong, you're going to hurt a lot of people. So no, these days you do not want to just pop in and have a go because it ain't going to end well. So very, very different.
You wrote a whole book on it, in fact. Of the time, though, from 2006, 2007 to which I hate to say that was like a decade and a half ago, to the present, a lot's changed, obviously. But what has had the most impact? The change that has, sort of altered the landscape the most?
Ultimately, yes, we are still trying to do the same thing, right? Show the right ad to the right person at the right time. And I would add to that classic line, doing so profitably. I think the thing that's had the biggest impact is machine learning. Now, Google went all in on machine learning back in 2011. Andrew Ng, founder of Coursera, was the guy that introduced ML to Google, and they were slow on the uptake. You know, they really had to be convinced that this was the thing that was going to work. I think it was translation that was the first project that got that off the ground. You remember back in the day, you'd take something from English, you'd translate it to Italian, you'd copy and paste that back in mobile in the intro before. They knew that these little devices were going to get more and more common. They knew voice was going to be a thing and that was going to change. They knew that 15% of the individual search queries every day had never been seen before. How the hell do you build rules for that? And machine learning, they became convinced, was the answer. And so that obviously now is in every product in Google Maps and Gmail and YouTube and everything in between. And that is having the biggest impact in Google Ads, where Google are taking away control from those of us that are control freaks and love to be able to play with the nitty-gritty of the engine. But at the same time, they are finally getting very, very good. You know, when Google were pushing smart bidding really hard 3 years ago, it was crap. It was awful. You really didn't want to play with it. But these days, that part of the machine is getting very, very good. Now, you don't want the machine writing ads yet. We've all seen the cherry-picked examples of GPT-3 and how amazing it is when it works, but it doesn't work every time. But we'll get there. We'll get to that point. And I'm sure the reps will be pushing it really, really hard before it's ready, because bonused on that. Probably cynical, Mike speaking. But that's the biggest difference, I think, over the journey, particularly the last couple of years.
Well, we know that some fairly significant changes driven by machine learning are coming up, like imminently. Google dropping cookies and going with the federated learning of cohorts. Flock.
Yeah.
One of the things you got to do with a business owner is put your speculation hat on. And what do you think? Like, how is this going to change how you relate to what you've been?
Flock. He feels, or she feels, so smart. I came up with Flock. Yeah, federated learning of cohorts, which is machine learning, but just done at the edge, done on the device, and it just sends a little bit of the information back home to Mountain View, but most of the data stays on the device. It will change things, absolutely. It will change targeting, and it will change measurement of results. So on the targeting side, this is Google's privacy sandbox. They're saying, come one, come all, tell us how you think we can make this work. Well, we can still respect privacy, but still make lots of money by targeting ads, because untargeted ads are annoying. They are useless. Google believed this in their DNA. And Larry and Sergey didn't want to get into the ad business. They had to be convinced of this, but they were convinced that a good ad is useful information, and they want to, you know, collect and manage and serve all of the information in a useful way. So once they'd been convinced of that, okay, well, we can go into the ad business. An untargeted ad is annoying. If I never see an ad for an HP laptop ever again, I'll be a very happy boy. I'm never going to buy one, ever. So it will change there. I think Facebook are going to be far more affected than Google, because Google have got so many properties, so much first-party data, Android, Chrome, YouTube, Gmail, etc. I think they'll mostly be okay. And I think on the measurement side too, Google are already saying that basically where there's gaps in measurement, they'll model. In other words, they'll just make it up using the power of all of their machine learning. They're saying expect around about 95% efficiency, or 95% of the results you see now. Whereas some of the reports on the Facebook side are saying you might see a drop of 60-65% in reported conversions. And Facebook have this lovely line of, just because they're not reported doesn't mean they're not there. Just trust us and keep on spending money. to hurt them more than, say, Google. I think Google will be mostly okay, but there are a lot of unknowns at this stage.
You made me laugh when you were talking about the reps pushing hard the ML ad copy. I'm like, I could just see logging into my like partner reward center and like, we'll give you 50,000 points if you will just try this out with 48%.
Have another fringe. Have another foosball table. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry about your clients. They don't count.
We joke about that. But when they were pushing this new thing, AAR, auto-applied recommendations, when they were pushing that really, really hard last year, the way they tried to sell it to me was, but you'd be able to reduce headcount by a few people. Like, I don't want to reduce headcount by a few people. My team are awesome. I love them. I want to get the best possible results for my clients, not save some cash and make a little bit more short-term profit before my business disappears because I've screwed everybody over. It's very short-term thinking. And obviously they're bonused every quarter. It's like, you know, it's an adoption competition almost. And I don't want to play an adoption competition. I don't want to win an award for adopting things that help Google grow faster, but that disserve my clients.
Well, maybe you should have offered to call up Google and offer to reduce their headcount by stopping giving horrible, horrible advice. we're talking about machine learning. I mean, obviously, like regular listeners know, we're a subject I'm highly interested in. You're on the paid side. I will generally more cared about the NLP side, like just so we're getting into ad creation, which hasn't been a big strong push till now. I know what you're talking about on the automated bids. I was just lucky to have tried it again with a client after like 2 year hiatus.
Tippity top is messaging, and the robots are coming up from the bottom. So bidding, yeah, it is basically, as you said, just a big math problem. And machines are very, very good at that. It's prediction, it's predicting the click-through rate, who is likely to click, and beyond that, who is likely to convert? And beyond that, what's the value of that conversion? What do you want to optimize for? You know, as machines get better and better at providing the answers, our job as humans, I believe, is asking the right questions. You know, the cost of prediction falls to zero. The speed of prediction falls to near zero. The accuracy gets better and better. It's human judgment and asking the right questions, optimizing for the right thing. You know, which direction do we point the machine in? That's what makes the difference when we're all using the same underlying black box. Then the middle layer, targeting, I'd say that's sort of like 50-50 at the moment. Google are getting very good, for now at least, of shooting the eyes out of the market, of not just focusing on the bullseye of your archery target, but being allowed to go anywhere on the archery target and saying, not now. Oh, that one. Based on everything we know about that person, they are highly likely to convert. We wouldn't normally show an ad to person searching for that term. There's no real commercial intent there. But right now, based on all the signals that we have, their past searching behavior, their browsing behavior, the other apps they have on their phone, all of that. They tested the lunar cycle to see if the phase of the moon would make a difference. It didn't, but they tested it. So imagine what else they've tested. And then at the tippity top of our pyramid, we've got messaging. They've tried a few times. They've had some computer generated ads. We turn that off by default across all of our accounts because they will generate them. They'll sit there in the background for 14 days and then they'll magically go live and nothing shows up in your change history to say that this ad went live. So we turn that off for now. It will change. The machines are getting very, very good. But yeah, I think messaging, persuasive copy, what does the person know that's responding to all of these leads? Oh, we're getting all these leads, it doesn't work. It's because your receptionist is crap and they've never had any sales training.
So, I mean, you brought up lunar cycle. I found that really, really interesting. And I think we're crossing over into an era where the machines will be teaching the machines. Do you think we've crossed over where even Google doesn't know everything they're testing because their machines have just gone, Matt, here's a thing, right? And just starting to make up their own stuff to sort of go, does that impact something? The tides are in. Does that impact something, right?
Well, yeah, in the way that ML is not particularly explainable unless you build that in at the beginning. And we've all heard the stories of the bias that gets built into these data sets and then how horrible the outcomes are because basically all this stuff is being built by young white men and there isn't enough diversity in there. And if you speak out, you get fired, just saying.
It's been said.
Yeah, well, there's some pretty horrific stories over the last little while about that. So yes, to what you're saying, we don't necessarily know all of the signals that are going into that machine, and we don't really understand the weighting that the machine is giving then to all of those signals. What's it been told to optimize for? It's probably optimizing for Google's profit more than other things. Yes, they always put the user in the center, they tell us all the time, because as you said in the intro, they want people coming back. We don't go back to being, or bless them, Yahoo, because we didn't find what we wanted there. Many of us go off to DuckDuckGo once a year and we try and we really want it to work, but it doesn't. The results are awful and we go back to Google because it works. So they're very, very good at optimizing for something. It's probably, if you look at the growth of their revenue.
March 2021, and we're back after these messages.
Here's the truth you need to know about podcasting. The biggest problem you face right now as a future podcaster is the myth that it takes an enormous amount of time or effort to produce a high-quality professional podcast. Luckily for you, there's a solution to your problem. If you're an online marketer who really needs to grow an audience of buyers but can't do all the heavy lifting alone, then here's the solution you're looking for. Introducing the DFY Podcasting System. Here's what you get. 30 minutes of one-on-one training, a weekly podcast for you or your company, distribution to almost every podcast portal, an embeddable player for your website, an ebook called How to Podcast, created for WMR.FM show hosts, and much, much more. And best of all, you'll start seeing results with the DFY podcast system within a couple of weeks. You're just one podcast away from growing brand awareness and engagement in your business. Log on to podcast.wmr.fm and sign up for a deeply discounted rate today. That's podcast.wmr.fm. Here's the truth you need to know about podcasting. The biggest problem you face right now.
Webcology takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology on WMR.FM. It is the 25th of March, 2021. And this is Jim Hedger from Showies Media. Can I do that one again, Brasco? I just got a phone call coming in that just threw me. Sorry about that, guys.
A good time for it.
And one of the founders of Web Savvy, he's joining us from Melbourne, Australia. Mike, there's some disruption happening in the Australian media scene. I don't think most of our audience in North America really understand what's happening. Google and Facebook are in a position where they have to pay some members of the Australian media to publish their content. And honest to goodness, that's about as much of the story as we over here know.
Yeah, it's it has been a changing story over the past few weeks. It's been very odd. So Google announced around the rest of the world they're going to spend $1.3 billion across 3 years for News Showcase. Well, a billion of your dollars to help journalism, to help media. And in this country, as I understand it, I'm not a lawyer, allegedly, all of that stuff, Rupert Murdoch controls something like 77% of our media in this country. They probably therefore had some help in getting the current government into position. I know nothing about politics, so, you know, take this with a large pinch of salt. So when that rolled out, Murdoch's lot basically said, well, actually, no, we won't take that deal on the table, New Showcase. We're going to lobby for something else. And this got very, very, very close. Well, actually, I think it now is law in Australia. But they've all done deals behind the scene at the 11th and a half hour so that they don't have to go through this media bargaining code, which really put all of the power on the side of Murdoch, predominantly. Didn't really help the small media players in Australia come from news-related stuff. I mean, they don't make any money by sending a click off to a news media website. So they reckon maybe if you're generous, it's, you know, $10 million a year of their Australian revenue, and yet Murdoch's lot were coming after them for a couple of hundred million. And it just wasn't gonna work, so Google threatened to leave Australia. And I gotta say, we had a meeting, I certainly won't mention names, but reasonably high up inside of Google about a couple of days before everything went through Parliament. And the mood was pretty somber in Sydney head office. They were thinking, well, you know, at least we can sell YouTube. And yeah, the top people would no doubt have been sent around the world and gone to Dublin and Mountain View. But they were pretty worried that this might mean the end of Google. Now, we did get clarification. Google Docs would have stayed, and Sheets, and even YouTube, surprisingly. They're always touting it as the second biggest search engine. But YouTube would have stayed, Maps would have stayed, but Google, as we know it, would have gone. Thankfully, that didn't happen. I wasn't too worried until those last couple of days where I didn't sleep very well of, Jesus, if Google leaves, like, what's going to happen to all these small businesses? What's going to happen to my business?
Indeed, it must have been chaos.
It was pretty scary. And then Facebook stuck, you know, their heels in the sand. Maybe it came all the way from the top. We'll never know. And they basically decided to block any news content. The problem is nobody ever really defined news. So the local dog shelter would try and put a post up about the dog that needed to be picked up this weekend, and they weren't allowed to post. I was posting in a private group, so I teach a few hundred agencies to do what we do, and I tried to put a post to some completely unrelated thing. It was probably about Flock and Fledge and Turtle Dove and all those birds, and I couldn't. It wouldn't let me post. Being ended up with 50, 60, 70% of the market, the way it was written, they would then have to go through this same process, which was something like giving Murdoch advanced notice of the algorithm. I mean, which politician wrote that? Like, there's one algorithm, and they all sit there and go, oh, next month we'll update it like this. Here you go, have a copy. There's not one. It's changing hundreds of times a month. It's ridiculous. And that's why Google had to make such a hard stand. Opportunity? I don't know. I think we were really just all sort of sitting there going, surely sense has to prevail. Surely they're going to figure this out.
You get to still work.
Well, and the government, you imagine, like, Google disappears. I don't think they're going to last very long next election either. That's going to disrupt. We've got 2 million small businesses in Australia. There would have been a lot of unhappy people. So, yes, didn't have to think too heavily about that. And we just keep doing what we're doing.
Something you mentioned earlier in the show, like right before we went to break, that I just want to circle back to and make sure, you know, I know we don't have too much time here left, but we really, really impress on people, and I would love your take on it. We were talking about machine learning. You were talking about A/B testing or variant testing and testing your on-page copy. And it occurs to me, because you also talked about, we'll be getting to the point where the reps will push it and it'll suck, but a couple years down the road, they'll probably be decent at ad creation. So we'll have a machine that's probably pretty good at ad creation. We'll have a machine that's probably pretty good at bidding. We'll have a machine that's probably pretty good at all of that sort of stuff. So when you battle a machine against a machine, that is me versus my competitor, and both of us are battling the same, we're using the same machine, does the battleground now become the page? Like, is that all that's really left? The only decider among quality score left will be
where that's going, but I'm glad I'm not a graphic designer. I also think the data that you feed back to the machine matters. So what first party data do you have that other people don't have? How do you use that? Not just customer lists, but how can you expand on that? And what do you get the machine to optimize for? So yes, the machine is going to be doing all of the bidding by then, all of the math, but where do you point the machine? How do you say these things are more valuable than that? And frankly, right now, there's a ton of unknowns because we know that the tracking and measurement side of things is going to change significantly this year. I'm learning as fast as I can about things like server-side tagging and going deeper into GA4, Google Analytics 4, and GTM, which is not really my bag, but I know that the future is based on data. Software's eating the world. Andreessen told us that a long time ago. And I'm sort of picturing three roles in this industry in the future. There's data, there's creative, and then sitting over the top of all that is strategy. And I think to get to strategy, you kind of have to go through data. And we're never going to be a creative agency. That's not our thing. It's a totally different sell. It's a totally different skill set. Hey, if I listened to Google, I could make everybody redundant, be super profitable, and start again with three graphic designers and a great copywriter. It's not the business I want to create. So we're doubling down on data. And I think that can be a competitive advantage. I ask CEOs all the time, where does data sit on your balance sheet? And you should see their faces. It's a bit of a what now? They haven't thought about that yet. Or what role does ML play in your business over the next 2 years? I haven't really thought about that. So there is this huge opportunity there to not just embrace it blindly, but to be thinking ahead of the curve. And how might we use 1,000 internal
controls?
I am a control freak, so let's just preface it with that. I hate that we're losing so much control. I understand, I think, having done all of the Google machine learning courses because I want to try and think a bit like a Google engineer. I'm not an AI engineer, but I want to try and think like them more. It's why I used to fly halfway around the world a few times a year and go to events like GML in San Francisco, because you got great access to the engineers to talk about what lies under the hood and really understand why they do what they do. If you go all in on the AI and you do lean in and trust, you still have to know the fundamentals. You still have to be the pilot sitting in the airplane. What's the pilot joke? Hours and hours of boredom with the odd moment of sheer terror. They do 7 minutes of flying on average on a typical flight, but they still know how to fly the bloody thing, right? So yes, you're going to lean into the machine. You're going to trust it. And with that, Google want the ability to go broader, to go to the edge of the archery target, is how I always explain that target. We tend to focus on high commercial intent keywords, and there is no way that we would ever put this broad match, weird, crazy term in there, because that's not going to work. But Google aren't showing ads to that universe of crazy broad match all the time, only when they believe there's a high likelihood of conversion. The problem is, we all understand, is that we have no control over that. And they're marking their own homework. They decide when to show those ads and how much to bid. And that's what I guess I fundamentally have the problem with. They have done so many of these things over the years that are just quick cash grabs. They always said they were never going to focus on quarterly results and Wall Street. But some of these feel a bit like that, don't they? Where it's like, well, yep, you're not going to hurt your revenue predictions by doing that little thing and that little thing. They say they're agency partners. You got to play by their rules. So you can bitch and whinge, but it ain't going to change anything. So we may as well learn to play with the constraints that we're given and play within that and stop whining and get the best damn results we possibly can for our clients within those constraints.
Mike, we are so close to being out of time. I got time for one more question, and it's a really broad one. I apologize, but like, knowing what those constraints are and being able to look into the future, where do you want to guide your agency, and how do you want to guide it there?
That's a wonderful question. I am doubling down on data. I think that yes, creative is a huge, huge piece. The machines will ultimately be able to do that, but we are partnering with people for that. So, you know, writing really good persuasive copy. I've got a graphic designer on the team now creating wonderful ads. But ultimately, I think data wins the day. So helping businesses think about their data, leaning into ML, playing with BigQuery more and more, that's where we're heading, is definitely down the data road.
Well, Mike, thank you so much, Mike Rhodes, author of The Ultimate Guide to Google Ads, and a wonderful conversationalist. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us today.
My absolute pleasure, mate. I've had a ball. Thank you.
Friends, you have been listening to Webcology on WMR.fm. It is the 25th of March, 2021. Spring is here, but you know how it goes. Spring is almost gone, so get out there and enjoy it while you can. And friends, remember, we're almost at the finish line. COVID is still very real. It's 500,000 Americans dead, 30-some-odd thousand Canadians dead. I don't know how many people in the UK and across Europe, but we're getting close. Be careful. Wear your mask. Stay away from people. Follow protocols, even after you've been vaccinated. Continue to follow health protocols. We're going to get through this. We're going to get our society and our economy back. It's going to take all of us working together, and we can do it. Thank you for listening to Webcology on WMR.fm today. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedge from Digital Always Media. We're back next week, and thanks.
Location or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.